Welcome to Self-Compassionate Professor, a career wellness podcast for academics looking to end the academic overwork burnout cycle and pave a self-compassionate career path, a path supportive of body, mind, and spirit. I'm Danielle Delamar. Glad you're here. Hello, welcome, welcome. This is episode 180, and I'm Danielle Delamar. I had the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Martha Kenny for today's interview, which is a perfect spring interview because she talks about the importance of knowing your why. Why do you show up to your life and to your work the way you do? What is sort of your essence, your identity, your values? And then driving your career, driving your life from that place of knowing who you are very, very deeply. It's such an inspiring interview, and it's perfect for our spring series because you may just be climbing out of that, you know, dark and deeply reflective cave of winter, right? And you might now have some ideas about where you're going and what you really, really want to do and what feels really, really aligned for you. So here is Dr. Martha Kenny now. Enjoy. Thank you so much for joining our conversation today. I'm talking to Dr. Martha Kenny, physician scientist, career growth and clarity coach, podcaster, and speaker and workshop facilitator for mostly early career academics. Martha, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Danielle.
Oh, it's so my pleasure. I've been so excited to talk to you. And one of the big reasons was that when we talked a couple months back, you had said something like, you know, time management works only if you have your why and you have your habits. And I'm not sure if that's exactly how you said it, but it hit me really hard. It's truth. It's truth. And I've never heard it sort of articulated that way. So I don't know if you want to go straight there, but I would love to go straight there with that. Time management works only if you have your why and your habits.
That's a discovery that I feel like I made a couple years back as I was working on reconstructing my career. And I've always been a time management and productivity nerd, but I realized that we start from the wrong direction, right? You know, we're in January, and I'm sure the people who are listening, a lot of people are going to, you know, be looking for new ways to get better this year, new ways to achieve their goals. And they're going to, you know, there's going to be programs and these several step plans that people will promote and things that people will say you should download. But the reality is that all of these things are tools, and you have to understand the reason why you're using that tool. What's your destination? Like, what is the purpose of this new system that you're implementing? Where is it going to take you? And do you have the right behaviors, you know, for where you want to go? And so I really believe that when we're addressing things related to time management, we really have to start from the inside and work our way outside. We start with the core of who we are. Who do we want to be? You know, what is the vision of my future self and my career? You know, where do I want to go? And then from there, once you've defined who you want to be, which is really centered on your values, there's a lot of, you know, exploration of values related to that. So now that you've decided, you know, this is the person that I want to be, and this is the direction or the destination that I want to reach, you have to ask yourself, what behaviors or actions do I need to adapt to really become that person and to get to that destination? And that has everything to do with your habits.
Mm. I am at this point imagining you sort of in your time management and productivity nerd days. You told me previously that medical school kind of stripped you of your identity and you kind of forgot what you love. And you told me that you lost your voice. And so I'm thinking about this person who whose identity has been totally colonized by medical school and who is a time management and productivity nerd. And you tell me where I'm wrong, but I'm guessing you would like just grab on to any new time management system and try to implement it. And my guess is, just based on what you said, that the system failed you time and time and time again. Tell me if I'm getting this.
Yeah. Not only did it fail me, it burnt me out because I was not doing that inner work to start with and really defining my vision for the future. I was overcommitting, thinking that, you know, if I created my perfect to-do list and went over my goals and I did X, Y, and Z, I'll be perfectly fine. I'll be able to do all of these things that people are asking me to do. And so I was committed and saying yes to a lot of things. And all of these systems that I implemented gave me this illusion that I could do it all. And it gave me this picture that I should be able to do it all if I'm more organized and, you know, and I make all the smart goals and do all of these things. But then at the end of the day, where I found myself is that I was doing a lot of things, most of which would not resonate with me, didn't bring a lot of joy and fulfillment. But what it did is it made me overwhelmed and burned out.
I'm also imagining that as you're sort of trying on all these systems and getting burned out in the process, telling yourself you can do it all, I'm imagining when you're on that path, it gets increasingly more difficult to turn in and say, what is it that I actually want? Was that your experience?
Yes. Yes. When you're on that path and, you know, I'm taking myself a couple years back, I was so busy. There was very little introspection. There was very little self-reflection because I was constantly doing and doing. And so busy that it's like in the midst of all that busyness, how do I get clarity about what I want? You know, how do I get clarity as to whether all of these goals that I have that other people think I should accomplish or pursue, like, how do I get clarity on whether it matters to me in the end or not? And so I think in the hecticness, in the busyness of all of that, it was really difficult for me to have any sense of clarity because I went from one thing to the next thing.
Okay. So was there a particular moment where you were like, oh, I think I need to get some clarity? I don't know. I'm just curious how it all happened.
Like, as with most people, it really was the pandemic. So I would say like the year before the pandemic, I realized that, okay, I'm not satisfied. I'm not happy with what I'm doing from a job perspective. And I need to get clarity. So I realized I needed that clarity. But when everything shut down during the pandemic and, you know, work was not the same. We didn't work this in the same way. You know, our social gatherings didn't occur. I was left alone with myself, my kids, my two babies, and my husband. And I had a lot of time, took a lot of walks. I started journaling again. And so in the midst of all of that, I realized as I discovered it, I was like, wow, I went back and I'm like, I've done all this stuff. You know, I have all these external achievements, but why do I feel so unfulfilled? Why do I feel like I'm really far away from what I was intended to do, what I was created to do? And why is it going to work every day such a dread? And I felt like, you know, I had spent so many of my years in medical school and training after medical school, and then like, you know, a few years as an attendant, but I felt like I hadn't accomplished anything, that all of that time just had, I wouldn't say gone to waste, because I don't believe that anything is wasteful, because I think there's an intent and purpose in every season we go through. But all of that time just seemed to have been misdirected or really misaligned with what my purpose was.
So when you started asking these questions, why am I so unfulfilled? What's going on? You know, I feel like I haven't done anything. What were some of the answers that were coming to you, and how were you sort of emotionally processing those? That's a big one. And I'm asking that for listeners too. I just want to make sure that we address the emotional piece, like, oh my gosh, I'm unfulfilled. I'm actually turning into that reality. And it's sort of taking my breath away. Like, these are the things I'm thinking about, but I don't know what your experience was like. So tell us a little bit about that.
When in going through that experience, what you need the most is to just pause. And I think, you know, I was lucky I don't want to say lucky because the COVID pandemic was terrible, but the silver lining is that for many of us, it gave us that forced pause that we needed. And so all of the things that I had taken on, I couldn't even do during that time. And so there was like, you know, there was really no live events. There a lot of the committee meetings and a lot of the other things that we used to do before as we were trying to navigate through this new space of the pandemic and, you know, overwhelmed by the deaths and the surge and just the suffering that we saw around us, we didn't do any of those activities. So it really gave me this pause that I really needed, which I don't, looking back on it, I don't know, would I have taken that pause without the pandemic? I believe I would have. But I think I would have probably suffered emotionally and mentally more before I did because of the kind of person that I am. Because I have this, you know, mindset that I should be able to do all of this. I shouldn't feel as overwhelmed as I do. But, you know, that pause was really crucial. And then also something happened in the right, a little bit before the pandemic. And it helped me with the reflection process. My mom had traveled back home. I'm originally from Ghana. And my mom had traveled back home to Ghana and she went to our hometown and met with my elementary school teacher. I left Ghana when I was 7. So we're talking about somebody who hasn't seen me in decades, right? In quite a while. And so he remembered me and he remembered my mom. And he actually then saw my mom the next day and gave her a picture. And the picture is a picture of myself and several other students in the classroom. And he gave this picture to my mom, and when my mom returned, she gave me that picture. And so I started, when I saw the picture and I saw myself, I was like, you know, I started thinking about, well, what were your dreams back then? I was 7 years old in the picture. You know, what were your dreams? What is it that you believe that you could accomplish? And I really started going back and thinking about what that 7-year-old girl dreamed about before the world began to shape her mind. And I love the term you used earlier, colonize her mind. As I started thinking about that, it really helped me to start thinking more about my values and my purpose. And I'm also somebody of deep faith and spirituality. So I really was praying and reading the word of God throughout the midst of this and just searching and digging into it as well during this time.
Okay, so I'm so curious what the 7-year-old's dreams were. I mean, I don't know if you have that really articulated in like an easy, simple way at this point. I'm imagining it was probably just like a felt sense, a lot of sort of deeper sort of feelings that you couldn't attach words to it. But I don't know, what were the 7-year-old's big dreams? Did you figure that out in words?
It was actually quite specific, surprisingly. And it was specific because of the life experiences I'd had at that time. And so, you know, at an early age, I was exposed to somebody who had sickle cell disease. And the interesting thing is that in that time, I didn't know the person had sickle cell disease. It was much later, as I grew up and came to this country, that I put, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. I was like, oh, okay, that's what he had. What struck me during that time as a kid and some of my early memories is witnessing the experience of this friend who would have these pain crises and realizing that the people around were really powerless to help because there was poor access to care and there was just not much that, you know, could be given in that moment. And so in that picture, you know, my dream at that time was to become somebody who helped people with this disease. And I didn't know what that meant. You know, I didn't know that that would lead to, you know, in some ways I thought, okay, this could lead to medicine. But I had, you know, Danielle, I had no, there was nobody in my family that was a physician. So I had no exposure to doctors at all. I came here and the first exposure I had to a doctor was my pediatrician. And so just even the idea that I could become a doctor that helps someone like this wasn't a reality then, but I knew that I wanted to help. I knew I wanted to make a difference. I knew I wanted to take that feeling of helplessness and powerlessness as you're watching somebody suffer from excruciating pain and there's nothing you can do. I wanted to take that feeling away.
So you carried this sense that I want to take this feeling away all the way up to medical school and through medical school. I'm curious if that's true. And I'm curious when you lost sort of your why. at what point did it get lost?
I mean, that's a great question. So I took that, you know, once I figured out, put all the pieces together, realized, okay, this is what this person was suffering from, sickle cell disease. And I learned a lot more about it and realized, okay, if I want to become somebody that helps people with sickle cell disease, I have to become a hematologist. So that's what I went into medical school thinking I would do. And I ended up, you know, not going into hematology. I went into anesthesia because I fell in love with anesthesia clinically. But I still saw there was opportunity to help and focus on pain. But, you know, going back to your question in terms of, you know, where I lost that why, because really the why was like to help and also make an impact, not just to make an impact anywhere, but make an impact specifically in people in my community. You know, so, you know, community and impact are two values that are just so important to me. And, you know, as I went through medical school, like nobody really cared about who you were, right? So it was just about showing up, especially, you know, started off in medical school and then it became even more pronounced in residency. You just show up and you work, you know, work 24 hours, whatever, take call. And I don't, you know, who you were as a person, very few people asked. Very few of the attendants or the, you know, more senior physicians you worked with asked. It was about whether, did you know that answer to that question or not that I asked you? You know, the question that I asked you while you're surrounded by multiple people, other residents, other trainees, sometimes even the patient's family is there or the patient themselves are there. And I asked you this question and you froze, you know, in position. And you couldn't think at that moment, you're breaking out into a sweat. You didn't know the answer. You must be dumb. I'm going to give you this look that you are dumb and I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Those are the kinds of experiences I had.
Whew. I was just struck by that very human reason for getting into medicine. And then that like robotic way of doing your work. Like the expectations were very like, you need to do it just right and you need to say it just right. I guess I'm really struck by that juxtaposition, the sort of depth that led you there, and then the sort of superficiality, is that a word? Superficiality that you sort of were trained in. Does that land? That's how it's feeling to me.
No, I mean, I think that that's is a deep and accurate description of it, right? It's like you're slowly being stripped of your identity, which, you know, is interesting though, because I don't know why medicine is like that. Because when people apply to medical school, they're looking for well-rounded candidates. You know, when I interviewed in, you know, for med school and also for residency, because it's residency that really is the training process that really strips you of your identity. So when I interview for residency in different places, they want to know about you, about like, you know, the amazing things that you're doing outside of medicine. And you even write about that in these elaborate personal statements. But in the actual training process and in the work that you're doing, it's almost like just do the work the same way. You're not encouraged to express who you are and what you're doing, or even your interactions. People don't even ask you about who you are. So you realize how easily you could be replaced because you're a resident, you're a fellow, and you're a no-name person. And so anybody that has that same training can just step in for you as well. Rather than just being, you know, Martha, who is a resident, you're a resident who is Martha. So who you are is like secondary.
Whew. I'm just feeling that. I'm like trying that on and it feels deeply, deeply painful. Do you think this is where the burnout came from?
Yeah. I mean, I lost my inner voice. I lost my confidence in myself. And, you know, and the strange thing is I'm saying all of these things, and you would think, okay, like you were struggling, you know, to succeed. No, it wasn't. I was doing well. I did well. That's the funny thing. I achieved what I was supposed to achieve and I did well. And so you would look at my resume and like, just not even know that this was the experience that I had. at all. And I don't even think the experience I had is unique, because I don't want people to listen and think it's unique to where you trained. I think it's common across medicine. And it's something that is being brought to the surface now as we focus a lot on wellness and burnout. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't even hear myself anymore.
I was really struck a little bit ago when you talked about being a person of deep faith, reading God's word, you know, taking refuge in that. And I'm wondering if that also got a little bit snuffed out during the medical school process.
Yeah, that's a great question. So in some ways it did, in some ways it didn't. Let me explain myself. What helped me get through, you know, because I did 4 years of medical school and then 6 years of training afterwards. And it was the 6 years of training that was the hardest. And so in those 6 years, what helped me get through it from a mental health perspective was my church community, my immediate family and my church community. I was very involved. And every time, you know, I was present and doing stuff there, I felt a sense of wholeness again. And I felt a sense of people seeing Martha and seeing me for me. I was able to make impact and contribute in a different way. But I think what medicine did is it began to really, the training process took away my sense of who I was in Christ as a believer, and realizing that I was created and loved and accepted by God, and I'm marvelous in his sight, you know, because every day you're going in and you feel like you're terrible. And you feel like, oh, I can't even get this right, you know. And my self-worth was being wrapped around validation about my potential and ability as a physician. When, you know, in my faith, I am worth way more than that. It's not, you know, my identity has nothing to do with my profession at all, because there is so many unique things about me, who I am as a person and the experiences that I have had. And there's nobody else that is on the planet like me at all. And so, but it was like my identity became wrapped up in the work that I did, in the profession that I had. And so it magnified everything, every small, you know, hiccup, any exam that I felt like I didn't do well enough on, or anybody that gave me a harsh criticism or anything like that, it blew that up so much that it was like, okay, they said I did terrible at this. I must just not be a great person, because it was just all about who I was all like just being a physician. That's it.
Okay, so this is what I'm hearing, and I want you to tell me if I've got this. So it's like you are doing the internship, the 6 years of internship that's just really, really hard in terms of identity, stripping you away of your identity. And then you have these like little moments of refuge where you go to your church community. You have these moments of refuge when you can remember, oh, God, I'm marvelous in God's sight. You have these moments that sort of keep you afloat, but sort of those are just like tiny moments, whereas the sort of bigger picture is this, I am just a robot who needs to perform in the right way. That's how I'm hearing it. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, that's pretty accurate. You know, yeah, that's pretty accurate. And in residency, we spend so much time working, and that those voices become louder because that's where you are most of the time as well. Yeah, that's an accurate description of it.
It strikes me that because of the faith piece, it might have been a little easier for you, and you tell me again where I'm wrong, but it might have been a little easier for you when the pandemic hit and you had this alone time and you had the space to take walks and journal and all of that. You started to realize this stuff that you had been sort of pushing out and pushing away. And I think that some people without the faith might be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to have these questions about my work being unfulfilling. I'm going to cover that up. Like, tell myself it is fulfilling and I am accomplishing good things. And even though there's this little part of me that doesn't feel good about it, it doesn't matter. I'm going to just like push it away. But it feels like it was always sort of nourished, that little part of you. And so when it came time for all of it to come out, it feels like, based on what you're saying, it was okay. Like you welcomed it. Is that true? Did you welcome it?
No, I did. Because as you mentioned, I have a faith framework that says to me, and I believe and I carried along with me all along, that I'm created for a purpose and created to make an impact and to help people. And so, you know, to go back to your example, if somebody doesn't have that faith piece and they don't want to go there, they don't want to dig there, maybe even going to dig there may dig up trauma and stuff from the past. If you start looking, you know, there. The thing I would say is that it is a sad existence to be living somebody else's life, to be living a narrative that has been written by someone else for you. And I think if we've learned anything during the pandemic, you know, and some people have learned this in other forms of trauma they've experienced in life and losses and grief, is how precious time is. It's cliche to say that, right? But it's so true. Time is so precious. I can't think of a more precious gift that we can be given than time. And I think that even people who have all the money in the world, if you were to exchange that for more time with their loved ones or more time doing something that was more fulfilling, they would make a trade because time is so precious. And so, and even like, you know, if you look at some research that are done for people with individuals who have terminal illnesses, if you look at the regress that they have, it's all really centered around time, elements of time. And so I think even if you are not eager to go there, it's a space that you should go so that the time that you do have, it really matters to you.
Because it's like you come to the end and you regret having worked too much, or you regret not having spent time with your family like you wanted to.
Yes. And then there's some regrets that even it's not even about death, right? There's some regrets that unfortunately is you can't really reverse. There are some things that you, like for instance, time spent with kids and cultivating a meaningful relationship with your children, they will get to a certain age where it's really hard. It's really hard to form a bond with adult children. You know, I have older friends and who talk about regrets like that. It's extremely hard. So with the time, like we have to live in the present and really think about, you know, how can I create value in my life in a way and live in a way that really shows that my time truly is precious and really matters to me, which is why I call, you know, my brand Time Matters, because that's the question that I came to ask myself as well. Because clearly my time matters for other people because you're telling me to do all this stuff and I do it.
Right. I love that you're going here with the time matters. Okay. Yeah. Keep going. Sorry. Yes. Yes.
But yeah, but the question is, what about me?
Yeah. Like there's so much sort of packed in that time matters phrase. So much packed in what you just said. Presence, stronger relationships with kids. How you can live in a way that is for you, allows your sort of real self or your purpose to sort of shine and be alive and be in the world. And so when you think about Time Matters, when somebody sees sort of the name of your business, Time Matters, what do you want them to see? What do you want them to understand? What do you want them to know?
There are a couple things that I think I would want them to think about. So the first thing is the fact that to really, for them to start thinking about their own lives, you know, how does their time matter? And also to think about just life in the moment, because time matters not tomorrow, you know, it didn't, not yesterday, but like in this moment. And so really being like present in this moment. So in this moment where you Are you living a life that's authentic to who you are? Are you doing things that is in alignment with what your values are? Brings you fulfillment in a way that you're saying that in this moment, my time really matters to me. Because your time really matters to you if you are living your life in a way that's in alignment with the things that you value. If you're really getting the things that truly matters to you done, then your time really matters to you. But if you're spending 40 hours a week, when it comes from a career perspective, doing stuff that doesn't resonate with you in any way, that you could care less about, that is menial to you, then it matters to somebody else, but not to you. So all of that time is almost like you're depositing into someone else's bank. It's like, to me, if you think about it from a money perspective, right? It's like you're literally being, you know, you've handed $1,000 to spend on yourself, but you're literally putting in somebody else's savings account.
Whew, that's a great metaphor. Okay, so I know we're about out of time. I want to ask, what do you want to say to make sure this conversation right now here feels complete?
I think the question is in the form of a question. Or not exactly a question, but I think in this year, in 2024, the most powerful question you can ask yourself is why. We live in an age where we're more accessible to people. There are, you know, more opportunities to ask us to do things. There are more opportunities to do more stuff. There's emphasis on hustling and doing like 100 million things, right? All at once. But the reality is, you know, for all the listeners, the reality is that, you know, I love this mantra. I don't remember why I picked it up, where I picked it up from, is that, you know, I can do anything, but I can't do everything. And so how I define what I'm going to do is really by digging into my why. Why does this matter to me? How does this benefit me? What benefit do I gain from it? What benefit do the people that I love within my inner circle, what benefit do they get from it? You know, what kind of fulfillment, what joy or satisfaction does this bring me? So we have to spend time and be a little bit more introspective and dig into these questions so that we don't commit ourselves to things and realize at the end of the day that, you know what, I wish I had not done that, but it's been 10 years and I'm never going to get those 10 years back. Couple of weeks ago, I've had two different conversations with two women, very successful, both in their 40s, and have all these external signs of achievements. And they actually said to me, you know, Martha, I'm ashamed to admit that I never really figured out what I wanted to do in life. So it blows my mind because they're successful, the way the world would define success. But, you know, as the late Maya Angelou said, you know, success is liking yourself, liking what you do and liking how you do it.
Thank you. I love that. I love ending on that note. And all I keep thinking, you said this sort of last thing, is time is so precious. Our time here has definitely impacted me, and I appreciate you spending the time with me. And, you know, the vulnerability and, you know, trusting me with this, trusting the podcast with this. Is there, for people who want to get in touch with you, people who are wanting to think more about time matters and the way you talk about it, who maybe want to do workshops with you or whatever, how can they reach you?
I think the best way to reach me is through LinkedIn. You know, my LinkedIn is under Dr. Martha Kenny. So if you look me up that way, that would be the best way to reach me. I can send me a message, and I'm on LinkedIn a lot. I love that space of all the social media platforms. Or otherwise, you can also just send me an email as well at my email is drkenny@timematterstoday.com.
Awesome. Anything else you want to leave us with?
Well, I just want to say thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it. And I appreciate that you gave me this space to share my experiences as well. And I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course. It was so my pleasure. Thanks so much for listening to Self-Compassionate Professor. Find me at selfcompassionateprofessor.com. Join Self-Compassionate Professors, the Facebook group, and connect with me on LinkedIn, Danielle Delamar, PhD, and say hello.